Transportation and Workplace Development to order. And as I have just been reminded by myself of talking, that we have this new system now in which it's loud with the new microphones, and so it's better for people to hear who are in the internet and everything else, but also can drown out some things. So we'll try to play with the volume here for those in the audience and those of us speaking. Welcome, and we are going to tell the committee my intention is to have the presentation and our rules, everything done by 2:20 today, a little brief leave committee a little earlier today. And what I'd like to do is, before we adopt rules or anything else, is have introductions of the committee and committee staff, and we'll go from there. And what I would like to do, and I'll start with my left, with our newest member of the legislature, as far as the Senate is concerned, Senator Larry George, and ask to identify the district that you represent and also thoughts that you might have in terms of the Business and Transportation Workforce Development Committee, you know, just general goals and things that you would like to see accomplished by the end of this session for you. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the fact that you put me on the spot first, so at least I could have, you know, heard a little more experience. Well, my district reaches from out by Hag Lake, out by Forest Grove and Banks, sweeps around South Washington County, picks up Sherwood, Wilsonville, goes through into Yamhill County through Newburgh, and goes down to Kaiser. And so if you look at the communities that are dealing with transportation issues right now, between Wilsonville, Sherwood, and Newburgh, you probably have one of the most congested areas in the entire state. And the what it's doing to the economy from Sherwood West is unbelievable as far as tourism, any kind of anybody who has any kind of manufacturing in Yamhill County. It's substantial, and the impact is big to our state's economy. And so I think one of the things that would be a big priority, obviously, for myself, would be the issues of the I-5-99W connector and obviously the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. I mean, they're huge to the entire state of Oregon. So it's going to be interesting to sit through some of these things and try to see if we can't figure out ways to get those projects moving.
Thank you, Senator.
You did very well.
Thank you very much.
I couldn't have done better. I'm Senator Lori Moniz Anderson, and I represent Gresham, Fairview, Troutdale, and Wood Village. And Gresham is growing also. That area is growing. We have the Pleasant Valley and Springwater, and transportation is a huge issue. We would love to connect 84 and Highway 26, and we would love to have infrastructure. I don't know if we'll be dealing with any issues regarding infrastructure in new areas, but hopefully we're going to be able to really be productive and solve some of these issues that will make it more livable for us who are growing very, very fast.
Thank you very much. We'll go to the end. Senator Deckard.
Well, you know, I've been reminded throughout my life I have very few goals, so I will we'll be brief on the goals part and just do my introduction. I'm Ryan Deckert. I represent Beaverton in Southwest Portland and a little bit of Alloa. And I think we're going to at least do Bruce, or Senator Starr and I and George, and you didn't play along, Senator Moniz Anderson, as the competition for the most congested. And so I want to make my case that 217 corridor is, and I drove it this morning, the most congested in the state of Oregon. There's my pitch.
Thank you, Senator. And Vice Chair Starr.
Thank you. I'm Bruce Starr, and I represent Western Washington County, the communities of Hillsboro, Cornelius, Forest Grove, and North Plains. Happy to be here. I think that we have an exciting session in front of us, lots of opportunities. I'm hopeful that we can continue to build on the success of recent legislative sessions and continue to invest in Oregon's economy by shoring up its infrastructure. And, you know, Senator George thinks that he represents the most congested area of the state. Senator Deckard is right in there with 217. The reality is that we've got very serious problems in our transportation infrastructure, and probably the biggest bottleneck to move freight through our state and through the Northwest is at the Columbia River Bridge, Columbia River Crossing Project. It's critical that we move ahead rapidly with that particular project, but there's obviously numbers of projects all over the state that are very important to each of our districts. And I'm looking forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, and members of this committee and the committee in the House to address these important issues.
Thank you, Senator. I'm Rick Metzger, and I represent District 26, Mount Hood, the only active volcano in the state of Oregon, and hopefully will stay just on active as opposed to really active, Hood River County, East Clackamas County, and parts of East Multnomah County. And it is a pleasure to have this committee together. I mentioned to my committee last year, the business committee that we had, that every member of the committee was actually hand-selected, and I was pretty fortunate to have that ability. And I will tell you today that this committee was hand-selected as well, and for a couple of reasons, one of which, for those of you who are mostly in transportation, but some folks who lobby business interests in the lobby in the audience today and listening on, as you'll recognize, this committee is this exact same committee last year, with the exception of our newest member, Senator George, that we had last year. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I had the honor of chairing with Senator Starr in 2003, the Senate Transportation Committee. And then last year, last session rather, Senator Starr also vice chairing when we had the business committee together. And now Senator Courtney has been good enough to give us both committees. Why we have the Business Transportation and Workforce Committee. And one of the reasons that the folks before you are on this committee because they are extremely talented at what they do, but also because of the background they have on these issues. As you have all heard, we intend to have a workmanlike product in this legislature this year and get out in a timely fashion and do good work in the process. But the reality is, when you're used to having a transportation committee that meets three times a week and a business committee that meets three times a week, you know, we'll be meeting three times a week for both committees, which means essentially one day for transportation, which will be Thursday for most cases until we get later in the session, and Monday and Wednesday for business issues. So there will not be a lot of time in the committee to actually spend as much time, shall I say, in having dialogue in this format. We intend to give the same attention to those issues, but a lot of them are going to be done outside of the committee as they're aired here, and asking my colleagues then to chair different subgroups to come back so that we can do the real work in this committee in an expeditious manner. And so for those of you who have issues, you know, keep that in mind. We have heard a number of issues in the past that this committee and the Senate have passed out and yet are not into law, and you'll see some of those on the docket early. And my intention is those that had that support before are going to be moved very quickly before we address new issues. So your support would be welcome in that, and just understand the time frame that we want to do good work for the state, and we need to also do it in a workmanlike way. And so trying to get to the nuts and bolts of issues will be critical. I'd like to now introduce Janet Atkins, who will be our committee administrator. Janet is another one who is extremely popular in the Capitol, because I will say that, and I think this will be echoed by those who have worked with Janet and in the audience as well, is probably one of the finest, if not the finest, administrators, and has worked both in business and transportation issues, but is a true expert on transportation issues. And so when we're trying to move in a quick manner, it's great to have someone with Janet's experience, not only as an administrator, but with the issues at hand. So I'd like Janet to make a few comments and then to introduce any staff that she has here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to be here and to meet Senator George and to work with you and the rest of the senators. I want to introduce the committee assistant, Adam Hicks, and he's been here in Oregon a number of years, but he's a transplant from Michigan. And he's doing a great job so far, and there's a lot to do over there that you don't even know he's doing. So thanks, and we've been around to meet your staff and your offices, and we're located in 334, the complex above the Secretary of the Senate, the hallway down there. So if you need us for anything, we're available, and we'll be in contact. So.
Thank you, Janet. Our next order of business is to adopt our committee rules, and members, they are before you, and they are, I understand, the same rules our other committees have. If you have already had any experience with any of the rules. And what the chair would do would be to entertain a motion to adopt the committee rules.
So moved.
Senator Starr has moved adoption of the committee rules for the Senate Business, Transportation, and Workforce Development Committee. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Our next order of business is, since Thursdays will primarily be Transportation Day, what I thought we would do is at least get a start before we get into committee bills, and we will be introducing bills as early as Monday, into the transportation issues. And what I've asked, on very short notice, by the way, and so I appreciate their indulgence, is the department to come forward and give us an overview of the vision for the transportation situation faced by the state, not just individual projects, but what is the challenge that our state faces in transportation, and in terms of the planning to meet that challenge, where we are and how this committee may fit into helping to advance that agenda. So with that, I will ask our representatives from the department to come forward. I will also mention, by the way, if you saw Matt Garrett was here, the director of the Department of Transportation, who I think is doing a tremendous job. And he has a meeting with the governor, so he was here to kind of get us started. And I appreciate his willingness to do that and to put this together for us. So, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. I'm Doug Tindall. I'm the deputy director for the Department of Transportation. Very happy to be here today to talk about the subject of transportation. There's a handout coming to you that has a number of things in it. Has an overview of ODOT, how we're organized, how we're governed. It has a packet that was handed out at the Oregon Business Summit last week, the critical needs, identifying the critical needs in transportation. And it has this document, which is one I'm going to be speaking from today, which is the executive summary of the Oregon Transportation Plan. The Oregon Transportation Plan describes a vision for transportation, and the good news is, Senators, particularly for those of you that talked about the congestion issues that you have in your areas, that is not the vision for transportation. So that's not what's described in this document. The Oregon Transportation Plan was formed by a work group of more than 60 people from business, industry, government, transportation, and advocacy groups, and was worked over the course of a year or so. And comments were solicited, over 1,000 comments were received. This is a very broad, very open vision description of the transportation system in Oregon. It defines 6 emphasis areas, and I'm going to cover those in with a little bit of description. Maintaining and maximizing the assets in place. The transportation system that's been constructed is being used, obviously, in some cases being very heavily used, but in all cases being used by some part of the public, whether it's transit, whether it's rail, for business, for freight, or for passenger, or whether it's highways. The transportation system is viewed as something that the public expects to be there. And to maintain that and maximize what we've got is a critical aspect that identified in the transportation plan. The transportation plan also talks about optimizing the performance of the existing network through technology. There are ways to make what we've got work better. One of those ways that you see every day in the Portland area is ramp metering. I can tell you from experiences in other states that if we had turned the ramp meters off, the congestion would be far worse than it is even today, even as bad as it is now. There are other opportunities, and there are more opportunities as technology advances in that area to better use what we already have on the ground. Integrating land use with transportation and economic development is another key area focused on in the transportation plan. That's a key because understanding where growth is going to occur, what type of growth is going to occur, allows us to make the best use of our limited financial resources in transportation. In other words, we need to invest where growth is going to occur. We don't. It's not that it's necessarily a bad thing, but with very limited resources, we just don't have the luxury of building roads where growth isn't going to occur. We need to target those things and link those up together to make the best use of the money we have. We need to integrate the transportation system across jurisdictions. As you know, I'm sure from your constituents, they don't know whether they're on a city a street, a county road, or a state highway. And we need to look at that. All aspects of the transportation system are critical. You cut any one of those links, and some number of people are impacted. The transportation plan identifies the need to create a sustainable funding source for transportation. Again, this is all modes of transportation. This has even, I believe, been made more critical with what we're seeing occurring at the federal level right now. The situation with the Federal Transportation Trust Fund, some people say that it will be out of money. I don't know that statistic exactly, but a number of people have speculated that it will be out of money in 2009, which means we won't get as much federal money as we are getting currently. And then the issue that recently faced by severely impacting Oregon counties with the loss of Secure Rural School funding, $90 million a year of funding that went to the transportation system in counties, lost because of a federal authorization that did not continue. Finally, the Oregon Transportation Plan, and I guess this sort of summarizes, I think, to me at least, of the five bullets I've just talked about, investing in strategic capacity enhancements. There are places where we do need to grow the transportation system. We need to make sure that we're picking out the best of the choices that we have to grow the transportation system. The Oregon Transportation Plan builds on a number of things that are already in place, and it's easy to talk about the problems, but I think you've got to look at what Oregon has done and what formed the foundation for the Oregon Transportation Plan. We were one of the first states in the country to utilize technology to do what's called weigh in motion, where trucks could weigh either at highway speed or at least with a pass through at a lower speed through a weigh station without having to stop. And weights of trucks regulated and critical to how we design roadways. And we were one of the first states to do that. We are nationally recognized. The Oregon Department of Transportation and Oregon in general is nationally recognized for using what is called context-sensitive and sustainable design. This is the process of making sure that when you make a transportation investment, when you do a transportation project, you do it in conjunction with the community or the environment that you're working in, that you fully involve everyone and everyone's interests so that you come up with not only a transportation project, but one that fits into the environment and the community that you're putting it in. We have, ODOT has implemented an internet webpage called TripCheck, www.tripcheck.com, if you're not familiar with it. It's incredibly heavily used, particularly in the winter months. It has camera images. It has, in the Portland metro area, a speed map. It has road restrictions that the travelers might encounter. And this has been seen as incredibly valuable to people who are planning a trip and want to know what to expect as they go on their trip. We have area commissions on transportation, one of the few states that does that, involvement at the local level, so that the projects that we work on are bubbled up and suggested through people on the ground so that we're addressing the local problems and not sitting here in Salem trying to think of that we know what all of the problems are in detail and we're going out to the local level. Two big things that the legislature has done, OTIA 1, 2, and 3, those packages in 2001 and 2003 have given us an infusion into our transportation system, as has Connect Oregon in the 2005 legislature, which addressed modes other than highway. And finally, all of the plan builds on what has happened, what has occurred with all of these things. As the funding packages have played themselves out, we have built and stimulated the private sector in Oregon. Not the transportation's good for a business perspective for the people who use it. It's also good from a business perspective for the people who do the work. OTIA has been accomplished with very few additional staff within the Department of Transportation. Instead, we mobilized, or the consulting community mobilized, to help us build those projects, design those projects. And I can tell you, last night I was at ACEC, that's the Consulting Engineers Organization, meeting. I was talking to a person from CH2M Hill who was telling me that they're already looking to move people out of state, move people out of Portland and into other states, because the work is already starting to fall away. As the glide path of expenditure in the LTIA program goes down, the work is going down. And this valuable technical resource that we have built up in Oregon is now being exported to other states because the work simply isn't here. But we still have them here, largely, and we still have that as an opportunity. The challenges that were identified in the Oregon Transportation Plan are the general population growth. The forecast is that Oregon's population will gain 41% by 2030. Almost 50% more people than you have today. And so when you think about congestion that you have today and you add 41% more people to that, that's even a radical increase in congestion. Add to that what the population is doing in terms of aging and the need to deal with an aging population who may not be driving, who still have to travel and may need transit. And those are critical aspects that are a challenge to the transportation system. Global freight traffic. Oregon is a place that geographically and by the transportation system that we've put in place to date is attractive for moving freight through Oregon to out to other parts of the world. What we've seen in the forecast from the Oregon Commodity Flow Forecast predicts that the number of tons moved to, from, and within Oregon will increase by 80%. That's from a baseline in 1997. 80% in 2030. That clearly demonstrates that the demand is there to move freight in this state. The demand is there, but if the transportation system isn't there, we may lose that opportunity. And we've seen that anecdotally with some companies that are choosing, I don't know of any that have chosen to leave Oregon because of the transportation system situation, but we've seen some that have chosen not to expand in Oregon because of the transportation challenges that we face. Congestion. I hardly feel almost bad about saying this, but obviously that it's speaking to the choir about the amount of congestion. A cost of congestion study conducted in the Portland metro area, which will be expanded to cover the entire state, and we should have that final report in February, talked about a benefit to reducing congestion of 2-to-1. In other words, a $2 benefit for every dollar you spend to reduce congestion. Again, with a growing demand for freight and a growing population, congestion isn't going to get any better without action. The plan also talked about some of the challenges that are faced in terms of simply moving people. Tighter oil supplies, higher oil prices are a factor that are going to change the way people move. And the plan, as describes in the vision, you need to make sure that there are choices for people to have so that they can continue to move even with those challenges. And also with global warming, with the increase in carbon dioxide emissions, changing again, maybe in a little differently than the oil situation, but certainly changing how people choose to travel. The plan also defined land use as an issue. I discussed that, the need to sync up land use and transportation so that you're building a robust transportation system where you are growing. It identified the security challenge. This is a relatively new challenge in the last few years that the transportation systems are critical, and as such, they are targets for domestic and international terrorism. And this is it's been some adjustment for ODOT to start to think about ways to make sure that we're protecting the transportation system, and it will continue to be for all transportation providers. Safety is always a challenge. It is on our mind every single day. In 2003, 512 people died on Oregon's highways. That's about 1.5 people per day. From my standpoint, I've been with the Department of Transportation for 28 years. 1.5 people per day dying on highways is appalling. And we need to continue to work to make our highways safer. Part of that is reducing congestion. Part of that is using technology. Part of that is other improvements that we can make on the highway and enforcement and education. institutional relationships. I talked about the need, the critical need for us to work, and I think we do work well with the other owners of transportation systems, whether it's transit districts, it's counties with county roads, it's cities with city streets. I can tell you, my previous job in ODOT was the state maintenance engineer. And if a road was closed, if you want to talk about cooperation and working between governments and people who could break down the barriers, if a road was closed and you put a county public works director together with an ODOT district manager, that road was going to get open and it didn't matter whose road it was. They just figured out a way to do it. And so that spirit of cooperation and making sure that we can deliver exists today. And finally, financing. There is no mode of transportation, whether it's highways, whether it's transit, whether it's rail, whether it's air, ports. There is no one that has that vision of a sustainable funding stream that they can count on and plan on to be there in the future as we grow and make our transportation system more robust. I want to tell you one thing that came out of the transportation system, and I just think that this summarizes the funding issue very clearly. The 2006 Oregon Transportation Plan describes the options facing the state and its residents regarding the financial situation. If we do nothing, the system will deteriorate, providing neither livable communities nor a base for economic development. If we increase the current funding to keep up with inflation, we can maintain the system and address major bottlenecks, but not substantially increase existing capacity. If we judiciously apply new funding to the most serious maintenance and congestion problems while looking for innovative technologies, alternative funding, and organizational solutions, we can take good care of the system. And that is what the transportation plan is about being good stewards and taking care of the system. With the challenges, we also have opportunities. We have the I talked about the connection with the international economy, a huge opportunity for Oregon. If you were at the business summit on January 4th, you heard about that opportunity, and you heard about the distinctive part of Oregon and being a leader in sustainability, and that's really our trademark. The transportation system, because of the recent investments, I can't thank you enough and can't thank the legislative body enough for the foresight to make the investments in OTIA and Connect Oregon. The transportation system at this moment is in relatively good shape. There are a backlog of items we have. We obviously have congestion problems, but structurally, because of the investments that we've been able to make in the last 5 years, the transportation system is in relatively good shape at this moment. This is a critical time because that if we lose that investment, if we lose that momentum of the investment that we've made, the transportation system will decline. And we will effectively be liquidating the asset that we've generated through all the investments, not only in the past five or 6 years, but the investments that Oregon has made through the past century. Communities throughout Oregon are using public transportation and other alternatives to save fuel. This is a recognition that our other transportation modes are working. I talked about the innovative technology that's in use in addition to trip check, in addition to ramp meters as you drive up the freeway. You see those variable message signs warning you of events in ahead of you, giving you some indication of travel time. If motorists know what to expect, tendency is to be more accepting of the condition and not maybe make dangerous moves that you have to make, or that some people try and make. I'm sorry. And finally, again, I just want to emphasize the benefit that we see from the area that we've seen from the area commissions on transportation. We have a couple other initiatives that we've worked on, an ODOT task force. Examined alternatives to the motor fuel tax. It was chaired by Senator Starr, in fact. It's called the Road User Fee Task Force. It's an experiment that's going on now with some volunteers in the Portland area primarily to test out what would happen if you base your transportation revenues on vehicle miles traveled versus the number of gallons of gas sold, regardless of how you were powered. And thank you, Senator Starr, for chairing that committee. The Office of Innovative, we have an Office of Innovative Partnerships where we're looking at public-private partnership. Are there ways to bring private sector financing into this fray of transportation needs? And so I want to close this with that's pretty much where the transportation plan takes you, describes the vision and the things that we're working on, the innovative things that we're working on. And I want to turn briefly to how we implement this document, the Oregon Transportation Plan. And that is largely through the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, or STIP. It is not simply a highway document. All projects that have federal funding are included in the Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan. It is not simply a state document. All of the various local transportation improvement plans are included in the STIP as well. The STIP is generated by those and for the local transportation plans through those local transportation groups, for the state through the area commissions on transportation. And it is the vehicle that we use to drive towards the vision described in the Oregon Transportation Plan. Senator, with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions. I hope I've described the vision for transportation in Oregon, that we have one. It's clear. It was built in a transparent and very a manner that brought in a number of people. And that's the direction that we're headed. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tindall. I would ask first, and then we'll open up to questions from the committee, is part of, I think, the successes that we have had in transportation through the OTIA series has been the great work that the department, that the legislature, but most importantly, user groups, the public, and the media has to identify and really hit home the real needs, I think specifically of the bridge program, where people understood the need and what it would take to take care of that. And we all kind of moved one direction to make that happen. And I would be curious as to, when we look at the challenges ahead, and we'll, I know we're going to have some questions about some of those major projects that are part of this vision to advancing the issues with growth and congestion, et cetera. You know, what's your own assessment or others in the department as to the recognition by the public at large as to both the challenges and opportunities that we face in transportation in Oregon?
Senator Metzger, I think that difficult for I guess one of the things that we should always be better at is being attuned to what the public is saying. But I think maybe not specific to transportation. I think that we see from a program sense, whether it's transportation, whether it's health care, whether it's education, you see from a program sense a number of things that that maybe you don't believe the public totally recognizes, because we're in the forest, if you will, and we live it every day. And so what we've tried to do through this transportation plan and through the critical needs document that you have and in discussion with businesses is to raise that awareness. I don't know that I can tell you, because I haven't seen a poll, I don't know that I can tell you where the understanding or appreciation of the problem overall is. I can tell you that people appreciate the problem when there's congestion. We hear about that. They understand that there's congestion. They understand that there needs to be something done. I can tell you for sure they appreciate it when a highway is closed, as we went through with Oregon 35, that there's a lot of interest in that, and there is for a period of time a very focused public interest on saying, we need to do something about this. We got to fix this. I don't know that I've seen that coalesce yet to be a broad, consistent message of or demand of pounding on the table that says we need to do something. Quite frankly, I think the Oregon Transportation Plan comes as close as we've come to doing that. I think this was a step forward in the breadth of people that we talked to. But as far as overall public appreciation, again, I haven't seen any polls, but I think anecdotally people are there. Whether they're there in a more strategic sense, it's not clear.
Okay. Well, by the way, since you brought it up, members of the Transportation Department and their private partners did unbelievable work in reopening Highway 35, which was wiped out by the White River glacier flow and the warm weather we had that severed Hood River County, Mount Hood Meadows from the other side of the mountain. And if you saw the pictures, it didn't do justice to it. You had to be on the ground and actually, you know, standing on a bridge that was with these huge boulders way above your head and going what seemingly forever. And then in a matter of weeks, I would have loved to play with some of those toys, the biggest trucks I've ever seen. But dozens and dozens at one time literally scoured that away and was able to reopen that. And, I mean, it was remarkable. I mean, we're talking winter conditions as well. So, anyway, congratulations for that. Members of the committee, questions for Mr. Tindall, you know, on anything relating to the transportation?
Just a comment, because I think it's extremely important that the public realizes the value of maintaining our infrastructure, because it affects all of our lives. And I think the fact that the failure of what measures were it, 48 and 41?
Yeah,
48 and 41 is the beginning. I think that that recession, in a sense, even though we all, it was really devastating, it, I think, did make the public a little bit more aware of the services that the state does provide and how valuable they are. Now, transportation hasn't gotten there yet, but I feel that eventually I think they will get there.
Other questions or comments for Mr. Tindall?
Is there anyone else who can testify?
Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, so just so it isn't a love fest and all, I was thinking, and this is not any indication of your allegiance to which college team, which I've had witnessed a vociferous, if you've ever been to a stadium in Corvallis, Mr. Tindall is a vociferous, outspoken, but I admire that. So I thought, when you were talking, Doug, I thought one of the benefits of a citizen legislature, we've all kind of lamented the deficiency of it, but one of the benefits of it is we all kind of go away for a year and a half and have very little interaction with this process. And so this is the first meeting that I've been at that is focused on an agency, and I was thinking, well, the Department of Transportation is the one that probably the public interacts with more than any other agency, or it has a more real-life, everyday experience with. And I think it was the moment that you indicated we are in good shape. We are on the right track, and I thought of all of the conversations I have had over the last year and a half, and I think particularly, you know, community by community difference and mythology versus fact is always probably more with the Department of Transportation than probably most agencies. But the conversations I have, I would say they're 90-10, that the state of our roads, the state of our transportation infrastructure, and from the incredible experiences we have, like I-5217, which was an amazing project that the Department of Transportation pulled off, compared to those mind-numbing experiences when two lanes are closed and two people are working and one lane's open and everyone stops for 2 hours in a metropolitan area. I would just, this is not phrased in the perfect question, but the feedback that I get, frankly, is that we are not in good shape. We are not headed in the right direction in terms of our road infrastructure for a multiplicity of reasons. But I certainly, more in terms of ODOT and the Department of Transportation, at least get frustration, and I oftentimes don't have the best answers to give.
Chair Metzger, Senator Deckert, let me clarify a little bit in the comment that's in the Oregon Transportation Plan about the transportation infrastructure being in relatively good shape. I think the key word there is relatively. And we made a $3 billion investment. This state has made a $3 billion investment in the transportation system in the last 6 years. I think relative to not having that investment made, where you would not have seen some of those projects come about and magnified the problems that we see today in great proportion. The second thing that I would say about that is that The investments we made were done through bonding. This is not a one-time investment, and that people are, that's actually relative to Senator Metzger's question, that it's somewhat heartening that people are seeing that this was a one-time deal and that there's a lot more to do and going to be a lot more to do in the future. So actually, if I painted that as saying everything's okay and we're on the right track, that was not what I was trying to say. I was trying to give recognition to the fact that the investment that we've made in the past 6 years has generated true benefits and has put us in a better position than we would not have been. With respect to the feelings about the department, maybe I'm wearing rose-colored glasses a little bit, but I think that in a lot of places, in a lot of communities, we're better off than we were. Now, maybe we were only at 5%. 6 years ago, but I think that through the area commissions on transportation and through our efforts to try and involve those local communities and bring them into our world a little bit and see what we're doing, my feeling is, and at least from the sense that I get reading the paper and the public feedback that I get, is that we are seen as a better deal than we used to be seen as. That said, people have a lot of things that they want to get done, and we have a big budget, and we are trying very hard to articulate the fact that even though our budget is large, it's all committed, it's all being spent, whether we're working on your problem or Senator Starr's problem or one of your constituents' problem or one of Senator George's constituents' problem. The money is going out the door. It's going out to the private sector. And we simply don't have the money to do everything that everybody wants us to do. And I think that is a very clear frustration that comes back to us. And one thing that we are continuing to try to get across is that we are spending the money that we have today. It's not sitting around waiting.
Yes, Senator. Good questions. Yeah. Senator Scott.
Thanks, Doug, for the update. Appreciate it. I'm going to ask some questions. You may not have information to answer them, so if you don't,
I'll make it.
I don't know how prepared you are. I'm not sure what the chair had asked, but I would be interested to know where we are with OTIA 3. I think OTIA 1 and 2 were pretty much out the door, and most of those projects are complete. But kind of where we are with OTIA 3 as far as construction projects under construction.
I'll give you two numbers. I will give you two numbers. You're correct on OTIA 1 and 2. 100% of those projects in OTIA 1 and 2 are in design and construction or already complete. The majority are already complete. In OTIA 3, the mod portion, if you recall, didn't really kick in until 2007, so that is just beginning. But in terms of the bridges, just slightly over two-thirds of the bridges that need work for the Oregon, the state bridge program in OTIA 3, just slightly over two-thirds are in design and construction are already complete. So in 3 years or 3.5 years, we're well on the way to implementing both of those programs. And the number of bridges continues to go up virtually every month that are in design and construction are complete. We had this is not just OTIA, this is the total program, but we had over $1.2 billion of active contracts during the last major construction season. We're close to that now. It always goes down a little bit in the winter because a lot of projects wrap up in November and December. And that was a record for us, by far a record for ODOT, and we'll set another record this coming summer. And in addition to that, the county bridges are, I don't have the exact statistic, but largely on the way, the county OTIA bridges are largely on the way to being completed as well.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. As we looked at this big bridge program back in 2003, one of the keys was keeping freight moving, making sure that the freight community could serve Oregonians and Oregon business. From my understanding and my conversations with the freight community, that had been accomplished. I mean, that, so for at least on one level, I think it's important to recognize that the department did what we asked them to do, and the freight community worked closely with the department. The department worked closely with the freight community to do that. Moving forward, though, as these bridges, you know, get completed over the next couple of years, I'm somewhat shocked that the conversation you had with the CHU Hill guy about the fact that they're moving employees already, that's surprising me to at least a certain extent, because if I remember the slopes right, I don't think we're quite at the peak yet, but that...
Chairman, as for Senator Starr, they're on the design side. The guy I was talking to from CH is on the design side. The design bubble is pretty much winds down about the middle of next year.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, not the construction. The biggest construction, you're correct, is 2008 and 2009.
Okay, well, that's a great clarification. But back to the whole discussion about freight. You know, clearly you've articulated the challenges upcoming, huge increases in freight, and that's not only in Oregon, but on the West Coast, I think in most of our ports in the West. What is the department anticipating doing moving forward to deal with that particular challenge? Are we putting together or making an effort to do a statewide freight master plan? It seems to me that that would make sense. I know that there are identifiable key choke points in our infrastructure today that you know, you could probably just put a map on the wall and point to. And talk a little bit about what the department is doing in that particular part of this whole equation. As important as, you know, getting kids to soccer games and people from their home to their job and back again, or whatever other errands, you know, our citizens do every day, movement of freight is so critical to our economy and the jobs that support it.
Chairman Metzger, Senator Starr, definitely agree with you. It is a critical aspect. Let me give you a couple things that we're doing. First, in sort of an operational sense, and I believe you know this, and just to tell the rest of the committee, the OTIA three-state bridge program provided us a unique challenge in that we were going in and doing a lot of construction projects on roads that were already open for traffic. When we went in and built the interstate, it was largely built on what we refer to as new alignment or places where people weren't trying to travel. And we took on this challenge in cooperation with the freight community to try and figure out how to stage in what order we were going to do projects and what time frames we were going to do projects to ensure that freight continued to move. What's come out of that is not only the OTIA 3 project, but also it's just become part of our normal way of doing business now, where we didn't always used to think about that. We would think about it in very specific cases. Now we think about it very, very generally to ensure that we keep freight moving. So on a very small level, much smaller level than you're talking about, we have changed our processes to make sure that freight keeps moving, and those processes will stay in place even as OTIA 3 winds down. On the larger scale, there is a statewide freight master plan in the works to identify all modes, highways, ports, rail. And I don't know, I can get back to you, I don't know the exact time frame on that. It might even be worth a presentation, given that you're doing both business and transportation, on where we are and how that's going to unfold. But that is in the works to make sure that, you know, I talked about, and it's really a good addition to what I talked about. I talked about the necessity when you have limited resources in the land use sense to make sure that you are putting your limited resources in the places that are going to buy you the best bang for the buck. And I think that the freight issue is it's much more of an issue than it has been in the past in commission discussions, and I think it will continue to be more of an issue as the master plan is developed that will very specifically identify those locations. And the freight in OTIA 3, there was money set aside for freight and at $4 billion of projects identified, so clearly the need's out there, and I think that recognition is becoming very broad that we have to move freight and that has to be a focus and we need to deal with it.
Well, and Mr. Chair, my sense too is that a freight project, though it might be identified as such, really benefits everyone else that uses the system anyway.
So. Almost all of them.
And from my perspective, as we move forward in this discussion, you know, over the next couple of 2 or 3 months, you know, that is going to be a key focal point of this legislator of how are we going to address those. You know, you identified the challenges. You know, as policymakers, it's our responsibility to find the solutions, and you know that's a focal point for this particular legislator.
Good. Thank you, Senator Wallace Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I need clarification. I was at a presentation that the Port of Portland gave to legislators and the plan that they have. How closely? How does that relationship work between the port and the Department of Education? Because they are really focused on freight. So whatever you come up with, how closely does that jive with at least the Port of Portland? And I'm not sure if the other ports in the state are at the magnitude that we are here.
Chair Metzger, Senator Montes-Anderson, they connect a number. We are connected in a number of ways, and it doesn't do you any good to bring in a ship full of containers if you don't have the rail and or highway capacity to move those containers onto rail or trucks, and we recognize that. Connect Oregon if it cemented those relationships, if you will, and I think with the number of ports and as we worked through the selection of those projects, the identification of those choke points, what we call multimodal choke points. So we work closely with the port and more closely when we have those funding opportunities like Connect Oregon. But what they're doing has a huge impact. What the port is a real key player on the Columbia River Crossing project because of the proximity to the river and the number of things that they do there. So it's very high levels of participation on a project-specific basis and high levels of participation on a program basis as we're talking about those multimodal transfer points.
Thank you.
Another question. Senator George.
Thank you, Chair. Doug, I really appreciate you coming in and visiting us today. I got two comments real quickly. First one, I want to compliment the Department of Transportation, both on the Hood River project and in my conversations with local government folks from around the state, also the situation down in Klamath Falls that you guys clean up so fast. And I was struck at how people reacted and responded to the Department of Transportation when those two projects were, A, taken care of so fast, so efficiently, and done so cost-effectively. Your local government folks appreciated it. The industry people appreciated it. The people who had to use those freeways and highways appreciated it. And so, first of all, I want to compliment you on that. The second thing is that I was interested in something I learned during those, is that the Declaration of Emergency cleared up the regulatory hurdles that you guys have to go through to do that. And it seems like to me that I'd be interested in seeing how we expedite using the emergency Declaration of Emergency to facilitate a number of things, because it seems like to me that you guys took a great deal of compliments because we were actually able to get projects built. And I'll tell you, you guys did one heck of a job, and you should be complimented for it, but I know it's because that Declaration of Emergency freed you guys up to actually do your job.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I probably know too much about this, and so this answer will be a little bit too detailed. I apologize for that. The declaration, what you're talking about, did indeed occur in a slightly different manner than I think you might have described. What the declaration of emergency that we have is a fairly limited declaration, and it deals with our contracting processes, and we can move those forward more quickly. But the key is we have agreements with the regulatory agencies, upfront agreements with regulatory agencies, that in emergencies, we have three categories: emergencies, urgencies, and normal business. And in emergencies, we consult with them, and then we move forward to reopen roadways to restore the economy and make sure that people can avail themselves of emergency services. The agreement is that on the back end of that, we will go back, and should we cause harm to the environment, we will go back and mitigate it in a post construction or post repair manner. The on Highway 35, we worked very closely with the Forest Service. It's their land, and in fact, they are a regulatory agency, but they were as big a partner as we were in getting that highway open in that short a time. They understood that, so the regulatory agencies understand those emergencies and urgencies. But let me tell you about what's going on in an ongoing basis to streamline that process. There's an acronym collaborative environmental transportation and I forgot what the A stands for, administration streamlining. And what it is we have got in Oregon, and this is, I'm really glad you asked this question because this is a really good thing to talk about. This is new nationwide. In fact, we were the first ones to do it, and many people are trying to copy this model. Our model on a transportation project now brings together all of the regulatory agencies up front, and so we can get everybody's issues out on the table. It wasn't so much the regulations that were the challenges for us, as it was that you worked through with one regulatory agency and addressed their problems, and then you worked through with the next regulatory agency and addressed their problems, and when you addressed the second agency's problems, then you created problems for the first agency. But through the process, through the CITES process that we've put in place now, we've taken that off the table. That works. I mean, we get everybody together, all of the regulatory agencies hear each other's concerns about a transportation project, and we can move forward together to address them and address them up front. So beyond the emergencies, in the OTIA 3 state bridge program, we had agreement with the regulatory agencies to do what's called programmatic permitting. In other words, almost all of this work is very similar. So issue us here's the parameters that we'll do the work under, issue us a permit in a programmatic sense, and we've been able to do that. So we've been able to make huge strides, not only on emergencies, but just in the regular way we do business in streamlining that environmental permitting process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say I'd like to see us expand that if we possibly could, because it really reflects well on the agency. And following up on that, this is more critical of the agency. One of the things I think is the frustration when you talk about additional revenues and you come to somebody like me, and I'm very fiscally conservative, and you say we need additional revenues. One of the things is that we saw with the last gas tax vote, 88-12 against it, and here's what I see as a credibility issue. What I see is the public responds very well to the Department of Transportation when projects are actually built and they can see it done in an efficient, effective way, and it's done fast. And I think you guys are a victim a lot of times of the environment rather than a problem inside the agency. But with that said, when you look at big projects, like in my district, obviously, the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, I mean, how many years has our community been trying to deal with this? And we're just barely starting the acquisition process of land, and people see land being purchased that they just saw something built on 5 years ago. It's very frustrating. So somehow we have to figure out how to free your agency in a way that will allow us to actually build projects. It's just like what the legislature is doing with annual sessions. We're trying to show people that we can actually handle the responsibility before we go to them and ask them for annual sessions. Somehow we've got to have some of our major projects actually started and constructed, and that way we can go to the public and say, see, Department of Transportation is actually serious about building these projects. Otherwise, we have no credibility to go with them. And it's difficult to ask legislators to vote for funding increases without that credibility there, if I can put it that way. And I really think that there's some opportunities to do that. And some of the money that came in from Congressman DeFazio's actions, I appreciate what the OTC has done, but the sprinkling of the money around the state didn't focus people on the idea that if there was a chunk of change that came into the Department of Transportation, that money would be spent efficiently, effectively on projects that people could actually see. And I just think there needs to be some big awareness factors brought forward that some of these big projects have to start moving, dirt has to start turning, before we have credibility as you as the agency and us as the legislators to ask the citizens to do anything with funding. And I just want to kind of put that on the record. That's sort of where I'm coming from, okay, is that I want to see things moved. And I know in talking with a lot of local government folks who I know all over the state, their biggest frustration is a lot of times dealing with regulatory agencies that you guys have to deal with. And I know you're reluctant to say, you know, because you're working in some of these collaborative forums, that we have some issues with some of the agencies that do the permitting that do not allow you guys to do your job. And I want to say, whatever we need to know to free some of that up, we need to know that, because you guys, your credibility is important for us, because if we're going to ask the citizens for anything, we have to have the credibility to go with them. So I appreciate you coming here today.
Sure. Chairman Metzger, Senator George, just let me invite you down to Piner Mountain, Eddyville, where, believe me, there's a lot of dirt turning, and that is the single biggest contract that the Department of Transportation has ever led. It was a $133 million contract, or $129.9 million contract.
Lots of dirt. That's so I've dirt. Been there.
Thank you, Senator George. And Senator George brings up a good point, and Certainly, I remember 88 to 12 because it was 91 to 9 in my district, actually. We won for the highest percentage of no votes. But I think also what that illustrated, and for those of us, Senator Starr and I have been through that from that time forward, is the tremendous transformation of the Department of Transportation. There were a lot of issues involved, certainly, but the credibility issues, the visibility issues that you brought up, Senator George, when we go back to 1998-99 versus the great work of Director Warner and now Director Garrett, yourself and others, the fact that the OTIA projects, because they are visible. You know, you can see those signs everywhere, and people are saying, yeah, they're doing what they said they would do, has made a big difference, because you are absolutely right. People need to see that to feel that they're ready to move forward on that. And I think we've made those steps. And as I think Senator Starr pointed out earlier, one of our real challenges here is to keep that good momentum going, not only as your partner in the legislature, that we, our responsibilities, yours in continuing to do the great work and to be able to communicate to the citizenry. Certainly the projects that Senator George pointed out with Newburgh-Dundee or Sunrise out in my district, you talk about the biggest project, $120 million. These, we're talking $600 million, $800 million, billions. Columbia Crossing, $2 billion. And and I think we could also take a cue from the state of Washington, who, you know, made another tremendous transportation investment last year. But again, it was tied to specific people saw what they were buying, what the need was. They articulated the need and the end result, and so the citizens went with that. And I think we all understand that now, and our challenge is to be able to advance forward so that as partners, the state, the legislature, the department, and citizenry all see those results, and I think we're very, very mindful of that. Members will be seeing, and some of the specific projects will be integrated in some of the legislation we're going to be doing, so we're going to have more detail on that later. Mr. Tindall, I appreciate that very much. In the next 10 minutes, and 15 maximum, because I said we'd be out by 20 after, I'm going to ask Robin to come forward for a minute to give us... I'm not going to go into detail, but I wanted to give you some ideas of, I just met with the department a few days ago, some of the bills that the department is putting forward, and some will start in the House and some will start in the Senate, but just give you an idea of some of the topics that we will be hearing, and if they spark a particular interest, to encourage you to get together some of the department folks even before they come to our committee, just that may have a particular interest to you. This certainly is not all of them, but maybe if you could just touch on some of the highlights, because we have some interesting issues that we'll be addressing, and some are very, very significant, and just kind of put them on the radar screen of the committee. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. I'm somewhat prepared. I have a list here today. This is impromptu, so I'll do my best. Oh, thank you. I'm Robin Freeman. I'm the Government Relations Manager for ODOT. Thank you, Senator, for reminding me. Actually, our slate is less this year than normal. I think we had 30 pieces of legislation to introduce last year, and I see eyebrows raising, and we have that down to 22 pieces of legislation. So.
That's such great efficiency.
Thank you. I have been killing my own bills.
So. Isn't it fun?
Great bills so we can kill them.
Look, all things I've given up already.
Make friends within the department though on some of these. So with that, we do have a lot of housekeeping bills, and we have a couple bills that you probably won't see, but I'll mention them anyway because you'll eventually vote on those. We have some collection things that we want to do. We want to bring the department up to speed on efficiency. A lot of the agencies have some authority that we don't have, so we want to be able to collect our own debts more efficiently. So you'll hear about those. We have. Do you want me to talk at all about the House bills? Because we have some. House
yes,
bills.
I mean the key items that the committee is likely to hit. I just give them a real brief.
Thank you, Senator. Our three key items, of course, will be the Real ID Act of 2005, and that will bring the department into compliance with the Federal Real ID Act. We'll bring that bill forward. That is going to be a House measure. But I'm sure that we will have a lot of discussion about that measure. And I'm trying to keep the entire legislature up to date on that because everyone's going to hear about that. Everybody's already hearing about that. We also have something called the Oregon Motorist Information Act, and that has to do with our billboard signs. That is going to be, again, another large endeavor that we're working with the industry on. We're working with DOJ on, and we are working... with the House on that bill also, but I'm sure that you'll be working on that. And what happened, and the reason we're bringing that piece of legislation forward, is the Oregon Supreme Court had a ruling earlier this year in which they determined that how we determine an off-premise and on-premise sign, the way that we were making that determination was not was violating the free speech provisions in the Oregon Supreme Court. So we are trying to reconstruct how we regulate signs to be able to regulate them in the way that we are today. So we have a fairly complex piece of legislation that we'll be bringing forward to do that. And thirdly, we are going to be bringing Connect Oregon 2 forward, and we are looking forward to having some really good discussions on that. We, as you all know, I'm sure we have 43 projects that were funded under Connect Oregon 1, and we are looking to bring forward another $100 million in bonded revenues to deal with that, with new projects. So those are the big pieces that we will be bringing forward.
You know, one thing, Ms. Freeman, that would be very helpful when we do move to that point is I think the committee would find it very, very valuable to look at the projects that were funded under Connect Oregon 1 and give us a synopsis of how those projects that were selected and in the construction phase, how they tie into the vision and the other issues that we've heard about for ODOT as we look forward to perhaps another Connect Oregon to see that we're on the track for what the committee had in mind and when we passed the first one. And I think that would just be really, really helpful. So we'll see on the ground how that was implemented. I think that would be a really important part of that. I will also mention that if you haven't heard, and I'm sure, I don't know if Janet has got it out to you, but on February 16 and March 16 are the two Friday committees that our committee will be meeting on the road, and we have not selected that yet. I know Senator Starr has been talking to Senator Haugen out from Washington, and she is very, very active in the transportation issues of the state of Washington, and certainly the Columbia Crossing in particular. And one of the ones that we would like to do is a joint meeting with our Washington counterparts, which would be unique and but extremely important. So Janet is going to be talking to Senator Haugen and the Washington delegation about whether we can set up perhaps one of those 2 days in a Portland-Vancouver area on the Columbia Crossing, and that would be that would just be extremely valuable. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And I'd be happy to work with Janet on those projects.
Yeah, thank you very much. I said we get out done early today. We will be meeting on Monday at 1 o'clock. We'll do our first bill introductions on Monday. We'll ramp up soon. I know I'll be meeting with all of you about some of your own particular issues that you have of interest, and our work plan will get going very, very quickly. Senator Starr and I, as we have in the past, will work together on that. And so please give us your input on things so that we can discuss those and schedule so that your issues get the fair hearing time that we want to have before the Business and Transportation Committee. With that, we'll look forward to seeing all of you off and on again. I know you just have a great time sitting there watching us. So with that, the committee is adjourned.
We're so entertaining, that's why.